As we watch world events unfold and fulfill Scripture, it's hard to believe anyone could doubt God and His Word are real. And yet there are so many who either question or completely refuse to believe it. The God Who Speaks is a 90-minute documentary that hits the doubt head-on with evidence that proves God is real and His Word is the ultimate authority. Watch it anytime and invite others to watch with you. Just visit stream.afa.net. That's stream.afa.net.
Welcome to Today's Issues, offering a Christian response to the issues of the day. Here's your host, Tim Wildman, President of the American Family Association.
Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. Today's Monday, November the 10th, 2025. And as always, we thank you for listening to AFR. Joining me in studio today is Ed Vitagliano. Good morning, Brother Ed.
Good morning, Tim.
And Christopher Woodward.
Good morning.
Chris, I'll start with you. Your weekend?
It was great. Very restful. Had a good time. I have two daughters that play volleyball, and their team and parents of the players had a little get together. Had a nacho bar, played some cornhole, roasted marshmallows. Good time was had by all.
Oh, you did three things there. You played cornhole, which
is the dads of the volleyball players.
Okay, and then you had roasted marshmallows. Yes. Mm-hmm. And what else? What was the third thing?
A nacho bar.
A nacho bar. Did you work on that?
I helped pick up the food.
You mean after it was over?
No, I went with one of the other dads to pick up the food.
For the nacho bar. Okay, nacho
now, is this the thing my daughter, mm-hmm. my granddaughter missed?
Yes.
She's sick. She's got hoof and mouth disease. Mm-hmm. No, actually, it's hand, foot, mouth. But I always call it hoof and mouth.
It is. Yes. My daughter and your granddaughter are teammates.
I just say, you know, you stay away from that if you don't put your hoof in your mouth.
Yes.
You know what I'm saying? Everybody's. Yes, that's true. You can avoid it if you want.
And I've been doing that all my life. Right. Putting your hoof in my mouth.
Putting your hoof in your mouth.
You're just born that way as a man, I think.
Okay.
It's well, in the Bible
before we get to the actual news of the day, there was a Arctic blast. Was it an Arctic or was it some kind of vortex?
It's an Arctic vortex.
That came down from the north.
Yes. Well, as you said last week, an Arctic cortex.
An Arctic cortex, which was, he was also an explorer.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
He was.
But that's kind of what this is named after.
He's trying to fact check Christopher Columbus to make sure the world was round.
But anyway, seriously.
Cortex. that great explorer.
I don't know how many states were affected, like half the country, right?
Pretty much the eastern seaboard, plus some parts of the southeast, like Ray's new digs. The high tomorrow where Ray Pritchard lives, the high is only like 58, which for where he moved in the Tampa area is pretty chilly. It's still cold out.
It's a deep freeze for a lot of folks in the.
But like 2 days, Midwest, 2 days, and then it's right back to the.
Yeah, thank goodness.
Yeah.
I hate cold weather.
I'm right there with you. Yeah. Preach, as they say.
I mean. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim, Ed, and Chris. And Chris, what is your first actual news story?
All right, well, it appears that over the weekend, independent Senator Angus King and a few other Democrats that all caucus together voted with Republicans to reopen the government. Final votes are still needed today in the Senate and the House. Matter of fact, the Senate is set to reconvene this hour in Washington, D.C., so it's not over yet, but it's looking like the very long and perhaps unnecessary government shutdown is coming to an end, which is good news because there's a lot of people still waiting on planes. Fox right now is interviewing people. 1,600 plus flights canceled, 3,000 plus delayed as a result of the government shutdown. You match that with the SNAP benefit situation, and a lot of people are ready for this to be over.
Well, it was the longest. The big story is that 8 Democrat senators, mm-hmm. and I don't know how many were needed.
Well, that includes 2 independents who usually caucus with the Democrats.
Okay, they decided that they were going to go against their party, mm-hmm. right,
mm-hmm.
and vote to end the federal government shutdown.
Correct.
Okay.
I have the list here if you want me to read the people that voted.
I'd like it.
We're
in curious. Honor of Hernando Cortex.
Yes.
The great explorer.
All right. So, in addition to independent Senator Angus King of Maine, who again caucuses with Senate Democrats.
Gotta love that first name right there.
Angus.
You know, Angus King.
Yeah.
I mean, he sounds like he's ready to conquer something.
That's right.
Or eat a big steak.
Yeah, one or the other.
Yeah. In addition to Senator Angus King of Maine, we've got Nevada Senators Cortez Masto and Jackie Rosen, Catherine Cortez Masto of Nevada, Jackie Rosen of Nevada. We've got Senator Dick Durbin of Illinois, Senator John Fetterman of Pennsylvania, Senators Maggie Hassan and Senators Gene Shaheen of New Hampshire, along with Tim Kaine of Virginia. I'll post the list.
Man, that... Our country's changed, hasn't it? There's no more Debbie Johnsons out there in the Senate. Everybody's got an unusual name, but anyway, so eight Democrats.
Dick Durbin kind of surprised me, as did
Tim Kaine.
Because
he's a leader in the Senate for the Democrats. So, all right, so this means the federal government shutdown will be over, and if you want to look at it this way, at least temporarily until January, would you say this is a win for President Trump and the Republicans or not?
Again, like you said, in terms of long term, we'll have to wait because this is a postponement for the, I think, continuing resolution. But and Chris can give us details of this.
I think this
would be a win for Republicans. I think it was increasingly looking bad for Republicans. Here's the thing we sometimes say. Perception is reality. People have heard that expression before. It doesn't matter to a lot of people out there, voters, if you get technical and say, well, the Democrats are the ones who are holding the economy hostage. Because Republicans are in charge of the White House and both houses of Congress, it very easily can be made to look like Republicans were the ones doing the shutdown. And when you're talking about people getting SNAP benefits, I said this last week. I'll say it again today. Fraud that goes on with SNAP benefits, the fact that people don't have to work if they can for SNAP benefits, the expansion of that program to include, I don't know, just millions of people, all those issues, set them in a basket off to the side. You can't go into, Chris, you said this during our story meeting this morning, Thanksgiving with people not having food to eat. I've been getting posts on social media, seeing posts about local food banks, churches running out of food.
Mm-hmm.
And it was going to wind up looking like the Republicans were causing all that. And so I look at this as a win for Republicans to get these eight independents / Democrats to come along and open the government.
Mm-hmm.
And it looks good, better for President Trump, who seemed like it, this again, just the perception. I don't believe this, but the perception was he was fighting against getting people food, and I know our listeners are going, that's not fair. That's not a fair. I'm not saying it.
Right.
I'm saying you don't want to be the president leading your party into an election year, 2026, making it look like you have a problem with people getting food when they need it. So that's why I say it looks like a win for President Trump, too.
Okay. His polling numbers were going down,
mm-hmm.
President
mm-hmm.
Trump's, because of the reasons you just said.
Yeah.
The perception among the general public, by and large, not Republican voters, not conservatives, and you may say, well, that's not fair. I'm just telling you, was that because he was the president and the Republicans did have control of the House and the Senate, they're the ones who can solve the problem, and they have it. Now, that doesn't get into the Democrats being able to put a wrench in everything. So, but that, now that it's over, then I think the negative fallout for President Trump that was building is going to subside. That's what I think is going to happen.
Yeah.
Now, with polls, you know, you have to look at who's doing the polling and what their reputation is and what their agenda might be. That's why I'm always leery of citing polls. But if you're going to cite a poll on a good day, you got to be willing to cite that same poll on a bad day. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about whatever a good and a bad day is defined as in your politics.
Right.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Because I know a lot of people will cite polls and they'll say, look, you know, this side's doing good, or this issue's doing good, or the president's doing good. But then 3 weeks later, when the polls are reversed by the same polling firm that you cited right. 3 weeks ago, that's what I'm saying. You got to be careful about the polling firm.
Even if polls are legitimate, okay, in other words, the company, the group doing them are not biased. They're honestly
right,
trying.
Right.
It's still a snapshot in time.
Yeah, exactly.
And people's feelings and beliefs about a particular topic can change almost overnight. So, to your point, you gotta take good and the bad.
I don't want to bring up the financial apocalypse that might happen down the road, but there's probably going to come a day in the next 10 years or so when this federal government shutdown that we're experiencing is going to be something that is permanent and going to have to be dealt with, because the United States of America has completely run out of money mm-hmm. and can't borrow enough anymore right. to get it through. I'm just saying that could happen down the road if we continue, because the amount of debt, I know people are bored with this story and I am too, and we're tired of hearing about it because it doesn't, there's nothing we can do about it at this point.
Because there's nobody willing to do anything about it.
No.
Because it'd be hard.
No. Yeah. You're talking about we're going, what, a couple $1 trillion in the hole every year now?
We just passed the $38 trillion threshold in the last couple of weeks in terms of total debt.
Right. And so, how long can you keep going on with that? I remember asking a congressman 5 or 10 years ago, whenever it was, I asked a couple of them, I said, how much debt can the United States incur before we see a Great Depression type number two happen? And nobody can ever tell you. And maybe there's not a particular, place you can be, because if you can go to $38 trillion in debt, can you go to 100?
And we're paying $1 trillion a year on interest
mm-hmm. right.
on the national debt, which is now a larger number than national defense spending.
Right.
And what you're talking about is at some point, all the government money, all the government revenues will be paid towards the debt. And at that point, the government becomes insolvent.
Mm-hmm. But we've been being warned about this for a long time.
Oh, sure.
But it's a subject that doesn't interest the Tea Party.
Yeah, the Tea Party back.
And that was the last gasp of fiscal responsibility effort by a big number of large number of Americans.
But not a large enough percentage, even in the Republican Party. To have the lasting power it needed to make changes, even amongst Republicans. Even Republicans, except for a few handfuls of Republicans,
right.
Even Republicans don't care about it.
Yeah. Do you guys want to guess what our national debt was when we entered the year 2000?
A little nostalgia.
What?
From Chris. What?
$5.7 trillion.
Well, today, in the year what?
In the year 2000.
$5.7
trillion, and today we're almost $40 trillion.
Yeah. Yeah.
A lot of that's just in the last 5 years.
Yeah.
All right. That was the war on terror started, then the Obama years, and then COVID, and then Trump two-term. The blame goes for both political parties.
It does. It does.
Because neither of them were interested. I've said this. This is my personal opinion, is that George W. Bush got Republicans on the spending train because he saw how successful Bill Clinton was in defeating his father, George H.W. Bush, in the reelection campaign of 92. Mm-hmm. Bill Clinton promising money for this, money for that. If you don't want to spend money on federal education, that means you don't care about education.
Right.
George W. Bush learned that and said, you know what, we'll spend money too. Mm-hmm. Okay, and...
Well, also, it's a reflection of the American voter. I mean, because, and I think Republicans are rightly... I'm not saying that... I'm not arguing about principle here, okay? I'm arguing right. about just the political realities of the day and the moment and the here and now. When somebody's running for office as a congressman or a senator, those are the federal or president, they don't want to talk about cuts.
No.
In federal spending, because somebody's affected by that, mm-hmm. who has a constituency, who has voters, and who can make a lot of noise. And so if you say, as you say, we're going to be against, you know, we're going to cut this or cut that or cut this, then the other party, now in particular, Republicans have become very sensitive to this now, and so they don't resist spending anymore, is because they're accused of wanting to, you know, cut Social Security benefits, for example. Well, Republicans aren't really going to cut Social Security benefits. But the Democrat, if they say anything about reforming Social Security to make it more solvent for the future, then the Democrats jump on that and say,
yes.
See,
yeah.
See, the Republicans want to push grandma
yes.
off the...
You're
and
right.
So, listen, some of the
and guess
fault,
what? I'm grandpa now.
Yeah. And some of the fault in this lies in the American voter.
Oh, yeah.
Because the American voter falls for
yeah.
Right.
Oh, yeah.
That's true. That, to your point, oftentimes when a...
I have a point. I have a point. I have many more points.
Oh, you do?
Tom, yeah.
But to your point, oftentimes when a politician, mostly a Republican, talks about Social Security reform, they're talking about things that are going to help it be there for me and Brent. It's not going to impact
right.
you, but
I hope
it's
not.
Always can. It's always
I care about
them.
Number one.
Well,
it's right. You know what the Bible teaches.
There is an I in Tim, and I mean it. Yes,
that is a good point, because I don't want to lose. I'm not on Social Security yeah. right now, but I don't want to lose it. So if someone were to come to me and say, "All right, we got to do the hard things, Ed. If
right.
we're going to make this solvent
right.
for your kids and your
right.
grandkids, guess what? I'm going to go. We're kicking this can down the road.
Yeah. If they came to you and said, we're going to have to push that eligibility age to 75.
Oh, it's going to
increase. What would Ed say?
I would say, not on my watch. Yeah. You're not getting my vote.
Yeah. Well, oh. And see, that's where it's poorly communicated. But really, because really when they're talking about raising the age, it's not for people that are on it or about to be on it. They're, again, talking about the two,
yeah,
myself and Brent.
But I remember they were, you know, telling us back when I was 40 that Social Security wasn't going to be there for
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
You know, and it is now.
We're stretching it.
But I'm just saying, as you said, and we don't want to talk about doomsday here too much, but there is going to be a day of reckoning somewhere mm-hmm. down the road, probably in the next 10 years or so, that you're going to reach that point where I don't know what's going to happen exactly, but you're going to reach that point where the federal government can't pay its bills any longer.
Right. Okay, so can we leave the doomsday subject?
We can.
I'd like to talk about villains.
Let's do that.
I'd like to talk about Nancy Pelosi.
Let's
yes.
go.
I want to talk about a sure enough villain.
All right. What Nancy Pelosi do that upsets you, Ed?
Well, okay, you go. Yeah.
No, you go ahead.
Okay.
Oh, Chris
this,
has got
this
the hard
story,
news, and Ed's got
over the weekend. I sent it to Chris and Steve and all of them, and I said we got to cover this.
Yeah.
Because this made me hot.
Okay.
And I'm not just talking about the sweater I'm wearing.
Right. You're talking about your attitude.
Talking about my attitude.
Yeah. It's no wonder now that Nancy Pelosi can afford all that ice cream that's in her ridiculous refrigerator that she took a picture of uh-huh. 4 or 5 years ago that we talked about on the show. Here's the headline here. Whopping wealth of Nancy Pelosi under scrutiny as it's revealed she has earned $131 million in stock profits while in Congress. $131 million in stock profits while in Congress. She already makes well into the six figures being a member of Congress. She's going to get a pension based on that, for those not aware of it. And she's become quite the multimillionaire at a time when she's been lockstep in agreement with Democrats saying we need to tax the rich.
What is she worth? By the way, this...
How do we know this? This was had to be public public information, right?
Yes.
It disclosed?
Yes. This is a New York Post analysis and found that before first taking office in 1987, Pelosi and her husband reported between $610,000 and $785,000 in stocks in their portfolio. That has now gone up to $133.7 million. But here's the thing that blew me away, okay? I'm not opposed to people getting rich. I'm opposed to people getting rich when it looks like, it only looks like they have access to information that nobody else has because she's a member of Congress. Her profits in terms of stocks and returns, she made a 16,930% profit.
I want her stockbroker.
Yeah. How did 16,930%
yeah.
profit.
Instead of E.F. Hutton, you should listen when Nancy speaks.
Right,
about
yeah.
So my question, and this is just a question. I'm just asking questions
here. Yeah, okay.
Did she have
Tucker
access? Oh man, that's a terrible thing to say. Did she have access to information that nobody else has? What we used to call insider trading. I don't. And by the way, I don't care if you're a Republican or a Democrat. You shouldn't be going up there. I'm not opposed to people making some money.
Yeah.
Okay. But if it looks like all these people go up there poor and then go home rich. Mm-hmm. Something
Why is
needs
that?
To change.
You have to
yeah.
say.
Yeah. Your earlier question, how much is she worth? According to the New York Post, because they're the ones that did this information, and other people are piggybacking off of the New York Post coverage here, the Pelosis are worth an estimated $280 million today.
That's more than double what I'm worth.
Problem is they
Way
run,
more.
Problem is they run out of good health and life expectancy to enjoy it.
Well, so she does eat ice cream.
You've accumulated it, but man.
Remember that when she had her freezer, somebody saw it was $30 a half gallon?
Yeah.
Or something crazy like that.
Her refrigerator was bigger than a New York City apartment.
This was during COVID.
Yeah.
She got interviewed. And
I remember
she was
that.
Showing the reporter her home and her freezer, and she bragged. Did I have the price right on that? She bragged to this reporter that she had these little half gallons of ice cream in this big freezer that were $30.
There's the picture.
Yeah.
Eating her little high price.
$30 for a gallon of ice cream?
Half a gallon.
The New York Post cover story that time was Dessert Storm.
Well, okay then. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim, Ed, and Chris, take our break. Go ahead and take our break. Is Brother Frank going to be on with us? Frank Turek. Brother Frank Turek.
Okay, I'm sorry. I quoted the wrong price for her ice cream. It's $52 per half gallon.
Oh, a half gallon.
$52.
So what you're saying is a spoonful is a dollar. Am I right?
Well, it was $13
a
pint.
You got the brand name on that?
Jenny's.
It's a high value.
Mail order ice cream.
That doesn't sound legal to me.
Speaker of the House.
A mail
She's
order.
She's got a prescription for it.
Oh, M-A-I-L.
Yeah.
Okay. Well. We'll be back in a minute. Stay with us.
We're living in a time when truth is under attack. Lies are easy to tell, easy to spread, and easy to believe. But truth is costly. And nowhere is the cost greater than for mothers in crisis. When a woman is told abortion is her only option,
silence and lies surround her. But when she walks into a preborn network clinic, she's met with compassion, support, and the truth about the life growing inside her. That moment of truth happens through a free ultrasound, and it's a game changer. When a mother sees her baby and hears that heartbeat, it literally doubles the chance she'll choose life. Preborn Network clinics are on the front lines, meeting women in their darkest hour, loving them, and helping them choose life and sharing truth. Friend, this is not a time to be silent. It's a time for courage, for truth, for life. Just $28 provides one ultrasound and the opportunity for a mother to see her baby, to help her choose truth and life. Donate today. Call pound 250 and say baby. That's pound 250 baby. Or give online at preborn.com/AFR. That's preborn.com/AFR.
This is today's issues. Email your comments to comments@AFR.net. Past broadcasts of today's issues are available for listening and viewing in the archive at AFR.net. Now, back to more of today's issues.
You guys are college football fans, right?
Yes. Yeah.
Watch college football on the weekend?
Yeah.
Did you see the way Indiana beat Penn State?
I sure did.
I did not. They barely beat them, didn't they?
They barely beat them. They were playing at Penn State. Indiana's number two, I think. Mm-hmm. Indiana Hoosiers. And I'm not talking basketball.
Right.
This is a new world.
Yeah. Yes. Vanderbilt is also having a great season. It's a new world, yes.
But the Indiana receiver and quarterback, they won with seconds left in the ball game. And the receiver made one of the greatest catches in the history of college football. You got to watch this.
Okay.
But his foot, you got to have one foot inbound in college.
Right.
Pros, you got to have two. His foot, like an inch or two.
To keep
them undefeated.
And they won 27-24. Yeah. So yeah. That was a last second.
Last second.
Well, I'm watching that at lunch.
It was one of the greatest catches you'll ever see. But anyway. That when they say sports oftentimes is a game of inches,
yeah.
It literally is oftentimes a game of inches. But that was phenomenal. But, yeah, the Indiana Hoosiers, again,
undefeated.
Not basketball now, undefeated and ranked number two and deservedly so in the country. All right, you're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Well, our good friend Dr. Frank Turek is out in California, getting ready for an event with Turning Point USA, and he agreed to come on with us this morning. Hey, Frank, how you doing?
I am in the land of fruit and nuts.
Oh, it's no longer fruits, huh? They've been reduced to a fruit. Fruit and nuts, huh? Land of fruit. What are you doing out in California? Where are you, and what's going on?
Well, you know, California's a beautiful state. Shows you that what God can create, man can mess up.
That's true.
But I'm actually in San Francisco right now, but tonight we're at UC Berkeley with TPUSA. I was supposed to be here with Charlie Kirk. Charlie's going to remain in glory. But me and the comedian Rob Schneider are going over to UC Berkeley. There'll be some other students speaking too. So we're speaking at the probably most liberal campus in the country, or one of them anyway.
Yeah, what's going to be the format for you guys?
Well, it's a 2-hour event. There's some students that are speaking first. I'm only going to speak for about 20 minutes, and then Rob's going to come up and he'll speak, and he may do some Q&A. So it's a bunch of us. We're just continuing the tour that we were supposed to do, and I'm just going to obviously talk about what happened to Charlie, talk a little bit about evil, and talk about the gospel, because that's really what Charlie was all about, the gospel first and politics second. So that's what we're going to do.
Frank, at an event like this for Turning Point USA, I know that Charlie Kirk would invite young people at these campus meetings who disagreed with him to ask questions. Do you expect there to be people there at Berkeley who are opposed to the gospel, opposed to conservatism, all these kinds of things? Or is this going to be mostly fans of Charlie and just kind of a let's keep going kind of event?
I don't know. We'll find out when we get there. It's sold out. It's about 2,000 seats, so we'll see. I've noticed that when you guys were when they were down at Ole Miss, and I know Tim, you were there.
Yeah.
It was mostly believers, so we'll see. We'll see what happens tonight.
Yeah, the event at Ole Miss. When was that? Like 10 days ago or so, or 2 weeks ago or so? Was 10,000 people.
Yeah.
And the vast, vast majority of them were supportive of Charlie Kirk and were there to – and Erica, his widow, was there, along with Vice President Vance. So it was a – I mean, I know Frank Turek's going to be there, but we're talking about the Vice President of the United States.
Yeah. Right.
Now, but it was an amazing amazing event. You're right. But now Vice President Vance did ask those who disagreed with him or the Trump administration to come for and be first in line to ask their questions. So I did admire him for for that. And they did. They were some very hard and difficult questions that he was challenged with. But yeah, well, listen, we're going to pray for you. We will pray for you and ask our listener to pray for you. Pray for Frank Turek today and Rob Schneider and the other Rob Schneider. I got that right, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I had a childhood friend named Rob Schneider. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, but he wasn't the comedian that we're talking about here. But they will be in California tonight at Berkeley. As Frank said, it's a very liberal place, and wouldn't surprise me if they're not protesters outside the event.
Yeah.
And what can we watch that on your channel, Frank?
I think it's going to be live streamed on the TPUSA Rumble channel. Mm-hmm. The TPUSA Rumble channel.
Like, so let's get ready there.
What's that?
Like let's get ready to?
Yeah, exactly. It's not Rumble. My event. Otherwise, it would be on the cross-examined channel, and I would take questions. But this event is not organized by me. I'm just an invited guest.
I got you.
It will be on the TPUSA Rumble channel. What? So please check that out. If you go to Rumble, you know it's kind of a YouTube that doesn't censor people.
I got you.
Yeah. So
we'll
you
check
can find
that out.
The TPUSA channel on Rumble, it'll be there. And it starts at 9:30 Eastern, so 6:30 here on the West Coast.
Okay, so 9:30 Eastern, 8:30 p.m.
Central
time. Okay.
I'll roll on it tonight and see.
Anything else you want to say before we let you go?
Well, it's 2 months to the day that Charlie was murdered. And I miss that guy every day, and I know the country does as well. So just pray that enough people rise up and do what he was doing, preaching the gospel, answering questions, and showing people the right way to live is to conserve what we know is true. That's what conservatism is all about, conserve what we know is true. And to know Jesus and to make him known is why we're here. So let's try and spread that word. And we need to... We need to be engaged in every area of life because Christianity is a worldview that believes that we ought to be engaged in every area of life, including the political realm, for the good of everyone. If we're going to love our neighbors, then we want to put laws in place that protect them from evil. And if we have that opportunity and don't take it, we're not loving our neighbors.
Hey, let me ask you, amen to everything you just, let me ask you a question. Frank and I haven't discussed or talked prior to this request that he be on with us today from California, although we have Frank on once a week if we can, just to discuss various and sundry topics. So, Frank, if you want to answer this question by saying, I don't want to talk about it, that's fine too, because I could understand why. But what about the person who shot Charlie was arrested and is he in trial or something like that?
He's going through that procedure.
Going through the process or whatever like that. So, what am I trying
Tyler
to ask?
Tyler Robinson.
Huh?
Tyler Robinson.
Okay. So, do you believe that he's the one who shot and killed Charlie and that's the end of the story?
That's the best evidence we have now. And I know there's a lot of conspiracy theories out there, and I've addressed some of those on my radio program and podcast, particularly Candace Owens is pushing that. But here's what we need to remember about homicide investigations. And I had my friend Jay Warner Wallace on the podcast about a month ago to discuss how these investigations are done. The prosecution very rarely tells you what they're doing for several reasons. Their job is to convict the real killer, not to quell conspiracy theories that come up. For example, suppose they were right now investigating a second shooter, if there was one. They would not tell the public that. Why? Because if they told the public that, and then someone comes forward and says, oh, I saw the second shooter, they don't know if that guy really saw the second shooter, or they're just, or that guy's just trying to make a name for himself. He's lying. Also, they don't want to taint any jury pool, and they don't want to tip off the defense on what they're doing. I know they check into conspiracy theories because I was the subject of one of them. I mean, right after Charlie was murdered, you may have remembered the guy in the white hat supposedly signaling the shooter. Well, that was me.
Yeah.
You know, and the FBI called me and said, were you signaling the shooter? I said, that is the stupidest thing I've ever heard. First of all, I'm a friend of Charlie. Second of all, why would a shooter 200 yards away looking through a scope need somebody to tell him who Charlie Kirk was? He's the one under the tent with the microphone. Everybody knows that, right?
Yeah.
He couldn't even see me. I was 25 feet off Charlie's right elbow. The shooter couldn't see him. It's some of these conspiracy theories are so stupid, yet the FBI is still going to check into them. Why? Because when they get to trial, the defense is going to say, did you check about the guy in the white hat? Did you check about this conspiracy, that conspiracy? And then the FBI is going to be able to say, yeah, we checked into all of it. None of it makes any sense. Now, by the way, maybe some of these conspiracy theories might make more sense if it wasn't Cash Patel and Dan Bongino in charge at the FBI.
Yeah.
Those guys were personal friends of Charlie. Do you think they're going to not investigate this properly and intently to find the real killer?
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
All of these conspiracy theories, and it, by the way, it's also in a red state too. A red state who, by the way, is very embarrassed as to what happened and should be, because It was either the state police or the campus police. I've seen the texts that say, oh, we got the roofs. No, you didn't have the roofs. Mm-hmm. You should be ashamed of what you didn't do.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a red state. And, in fact, Greg Laurie is going to be out there doing a crusade. I want to say it's the 17th of November. This was scheduled before all this happened. But he's going to be there trying to get people to realize that the truth is not work through Mormonism or Mormon theology. The truth is that you're saved by grace through faith in the real Jesus. He came to save us. So pray that's another good thing that comes out of this. But don't pay attention to conspiracy theories for people that say, well, this is possible. Look, anything's possible, but unless you have evidence for that possibility, shut up, because all you're doing is you're creating havoc for, like, my friend Mikey McCoy's getting death threats. I'm getting people emailing me saying, oh, you'll never know what happened. You know, you'll never know what could happen to you, or you ought to repent. Repent of what? Because some Yahoo is out there suggesting that this is a possibility and that's a possibility, and that person has no evidence?
Yeah, I'm with you, brother. I'm with you, brother. 100%. I saw somebody insinuated that it was Israeli Mossad that killed Charlie.
Yeah.
Who was that
making the rounds. I don't know if that's still going on.
No evidence.
Yeah. Conspiracy.
Anything like that. Just throw it out there.
Israelis have also been blamed for the assassination of John F. Kennedy on the internet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean,
it was seed oil that killed Kennedy. Come on.
Yeah.
We all know that.
Seed oil. See, okay.
Oh, no, it was Trump. I'm sorry. It was Trump that killed
Kennedy. Oh, me. No. All right, Frank. All right. We will,
encourage people to pray.
And watch the event, too.
And to pray for Greg Laurie going out to Utah.
That event is Sunday, November 16th.
There you have Greg on.
16th. Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Frank. Take care.
All right, thanks, guys.
See you. Bye-bye.
All right, bye-bye.
That's Frank Turek joining us from San Francisco, California. He will be at Berkeley. That's like a suburb of San Francisco, right?
Or it is.
Right next door?
Mm-hmm. It's in that area. You've got Sacramento, San Francisco, that area. Lodi, Oakland. Stockton. It's all together.
And the Bay Area, they call it.
Yes.
But anyway, the event is on the campus of the University of California at Berkeley, which, as Frank said, is the most liberal campus in America. Maybe it's tied by some others, but it's very, very liberal.
In addition to praying for Frank being out there today, I was today years old when I learned that there is actually a Turning Point USA chapter on the campus of UC Berkeley.
Yeah.
But because Fox and Friends, to their credit, had Frank on earlier today. And shout out to Frank because he gave the gospel in that interview. But during that segment, they also had some sound from the president of UC Berkeley's Turning Point USA chapter.
Let me just say something we're all thinking, but I didn't want to mention this in front of Frank because he's probably a little anxious already, okay? There's going to be some protesters out there in this place where he is.
Word has gotten out.
Mm-hmm. Huh?
Word has gotten out on the college.
There's so many lefties out there in Bay Area. So I'm just saying, pray for Brother Frank. He's not responsible. This isn't his event. He's an invited speaker. But it's going to be him and that comedian.
Rob Schneider.
And then I don't know who else is going to speak. But my guess is they're going to be interrupted. And during the 2,000 people in. If it were me, I wouldn't feel safe.
No,
I wouldn't feel safe, and I'm sure.
Wow,
I mean, Frank's a brave man. I mean, to do this, because I would have said no, I'm not going to go there.
It is a sold out event today, according to their website.
And let me say just one other thing too. Okay, two things, just briefly. I didn't realize it's been 2 months. It seems like Charlie Kirk was killed 6 months ago.
Right.
There's been so much that's gone on, but Frank. Clear, he was a true friend of Charlie Kirk.
Right.
You can tell. We've been interviewing Frank for a long time. We've spoken with him face-to-face countless times. He's clearly still feeling the impact of Charlie Kirk's.
You can hear it in his voice.
You can hear it in his voice. This is not only the tragedy of a young married man and a father. This is a friend, a dear friend. Frank was his mentor in a lot of ways.
Right.
He is still feeling that. He may not get over it, you know, quote unquote, get over it for years. And he is taking time to go to these events when he's asked to speak. And I could tell in his voice, he's got some trauma. He was right there. He
went to the hospital
CPR
in the car.
On him, yes. This is what most of us saw on video. He was right there and saw it. And so be praying for that, for Frank as well as this event and the safety of those participating. Folks, we are facing violent revolutionaries in this country. It's the percentage is of the people in that category are still very small. But they're out there, and you only need one nutcase, and so be praying. Our nation is very, very sick at heart. Going to Isaiah chapter 1, our nation is very sick in its heart, and we need God to move. So a tip of the hat and admiration to people like Frank and others who will put
Rob Schneider, the comedian. I don't know him, but for him to go, be willing to go into that den there of secular progressives tonight. So he said it'd be on Rumble.
Yeah.
Okay, I don't get Rumble. Rumble's like a YouTube.
It's a social media video type thing.
If you
go to YouTube tonight and you look at Turning Point's YouTube page, you'll most likely see it because I watched Eric Trump and his wife Lara last week at Auburn on YouTube.
Okay.
Well, and then Steve Crowder, I listened on the way in. Someone had sent around, might have been Chris, sent around something.
Steven Crowder, the commentator, the podcaster.
And he has his podcast, The Full Thing, that you can see the video podcast, is also on Rumble. So becoming a place where conservatives can post their content and not worry about it getting sacked.
Okay. Well, we wouldn't have been sacked on YouTube either had you not talked about
ivermectin.
See, there you go again.
Hydroxychloroquine.
For those who, if a trip down memory lane, ladies and gentlemen, during COVID, and I did this too, but Ed was talking about such things as ivermectin being effective against COVID, and YouTube heard that.
They did.
And they said, no, you violated our community standards. And so we're cutting you off. So we got cut off from YouTube, but we're back on.
Yeah.
Right?
Right.
Right. Did Facebook cut us off too? Or I can't remember. Facebook didn't. But anyway, so we're back on YouTube. But anyway, yeah, it's for conservatives out there, you can have your microphone turned off on certain outlets if you go against the liberal narrative on issues. And right. So hopefully, and that hasn't been happening as much, especially since the election. In fact, a lot of the social media platforms, I say a lot of them, Facebook, I think, basically apologized, didn't they? I remember
Zuckerberg
that right?
wrote a letter to House Republicans saying that the Biden
administration made some mistakes when they cut people off.
Mm-hmm. I think you saw the writing on the wall.
They cut people off.
I just want to say one thing before we move on. I'm having an ivermectin sandwich today at lunch. So.
We're not endorsing that. We're just saying it could be effective against certain ailments.
Yeah.
Right?
Views and opinions expressed on
this podcast. An ivermectin sandwich. I think you can get that in Australia.
Yeah. Well, I get them sometimes at Walmart. Benjamin? They have those prepackaged, sandwiches you can get. I'll take the ivermectin sandwich with the hydroxychloroquine wings.
Nope.
It's great on popcorn.
Not the Buffalo Wild Wings.
Right. The hydroxychloroquine.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on American Family Radio. Tim, Ed, and Chris. Chris, what's your next story?
I have a big update in the sports world.
Give us a big update.
The International Olympic Committee is reportedly set to ban transgender women from competing in all female categories. The change is set to be officially announced next year. The decision to overhaul the current policy was made after the sporting community carried out a science-based review of a biologically born male's physical advantages.
Okay, this is a big deal because the Olympics, they're the gold standard of sporting competition around the world. And now the Winter Olympic Games...
They're about to start.
That's coming up in a couple months, right?
It's about February. Mm-hmm.
Okay. But then they have the, 2 years from now in Los Angeles, we have the Summer Olympic Games.
I'm sure they'll be big, beautiful games.
Yes. And so remember last time during the Summer Games, we had a few of the competitions where you had males who said they were transitioning to be a female and they were allowed to compete. You remember this? Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Especially boxing. Remember that guy who won, said he was a girl and he beat up on those girls.
Mm-hmm.
And then the
gold medal, didn't he?
Yeah. And then and I don't know if this was in the Olympics. Remember the fencing?
Yes. I forgot about that.
It was definitely an international event that had some sort of,
that was when the young woman said she wasn't going to.
Yeah. She bowed the knee and said, I'm not fighting you. Cause it was a big hulking dude.
Yeah.
Who said he was a girl. And, so that's not going to be allowed any longer, in Olympic sporting events. You're not going to be able to be born a male and then compete against women. Now that's just common sense. You would say, yes, it is, but in today's world, that's lacking in a lot of respects, a lot of places. So good for the what body made this announcement?
The International Olympic Committee. And the winter games that are coming up are going to be in Milano, Italy.
Yeah. See, if you don't stop this, this will ruin women's athletics.
Yeah.
And I think the Olympic Games knows this. You can't have men playing girls' sports and expect people to watch that stuff.
Right.
They won't. And the women will get discouraged and quit, too.
Yeah. Well, that was the prediction once. I forget. It seems like it was a volleyball player or something. But anyway, I remember this goes back 4 or 5 years ago. It was during the Biden administration where she said what's going to happen is that women will be watching women's sports from the bleachers.
Yeah.
Because men would, pretending to be women, would be taking it over.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that was a good way of putting it.
All right. You're listening to Today's Issues on the American Family Radio Network. We only got a minute or so to go before we take a break.
Yes.
So I will just, did you have something else?
Oh, no, you go ahead.
Okay. I just wanted to tell folks if we got some tours lined up, some Christian heritage tours lined up for 2026. I know a lot of people make their plans on their vacation time off or what have you for next year now. So we have tours lined up to the Holy Land, to Greece, to Colonial. There's a our tours in June and September where we go to Williamsburg, Jamestown, and Yorktown. So much American history there. And then we go to Washington, D.C., our nation's capital, and George Washington's Mount Vernon. Those trips are in June and September. And then also in September of next year, we're going to Boston, Mass., the old stomping ground of Ed Battagliano.
That's right.
It's going to be a wicked trip.
It's going to be a
wicked.
We went in October a couple months ago, and it was a lot of fun. A lot to see in the Boston area in terms of American history. So any of those tours I just mentioned, you can see the dates, the itinerary, the cost, everything, by going to wildmangroup.com, WILDMONgroup.com, and all the information is there. We'll be back momentarily.
The views and opinions expressed in this broadcast may not necessarily reflect those of the American Family Association or American Family Radio.